Today on Vox Talks Economics, attitudes towards same-sex relationships have changed with incredible speed. But why? Welcome to Vox Talks Economics from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. My name is Tim Phillips. Every week we bring you the best new research in economics, so remember to subscribe and follow us on Instagram as well. I believe we're all part of the same community, and we'd better start behaving as if we are. Well, that's a quote from Bill Clinton, who was then governor of Arkansas in May 1992, at what, amazing to think about it now, was the first ever large-scale presidential campaign event for gay and lesbian supporters. The two new papers consider the election of 1992 as a turning point in the attitudes of Americans to same-sex relationships and ask, what caused this change? Raquel Fernandez and Sahar Pasa, both of NYU, they're authors for both of these papers, and they join me now. Raquel, welcome to Vox Talks Economics.
Thanks a lot, Tim. Glad to be here.
And Sahar, nice to speak to you.
Hi, Tim. Thanks for having us.
Now, Raquel, start me off. Going back to the 1970s, when we first started tracking these things, the General Social Survey would ask, is it wrong for same-sex adults to have sexual relations? How many people thought it was wrong at that time, and how does that compare to today?
Well, Tim, it's really, truly amazing. Throughout the 1970s, when the GSS asked this question of a representative group of Americans, throughout the 70s, the average was about 22% of people approving.
Wow.
And by approving, what I mean is that these are people who answered the question, stating it's either never wrong or only sometimes ever wrong, as opposed to it's always wrong or almost always wrong. So when we say approve, we just mean that they're not saying it's always or almost always wrong. And that was true really on average throughout the whole 70s when these polls started to be taken.
And so you identify 1992 then as a turning point. So these attitudes have been steady for a couple of decades, but then they suddenly begin to change. So what's happening that's different?
What's amazing is actually the sharpness of the increase. It goes from, you know, that average of 22%. It increases between 1991 and 1993. We don't have a poll for 1992, so we have to surmise that it increased somewhere around then by 10 percentage points.
Gosh.
Now, 1992 was a very special year in the United States. It was a presidential election year. The Democratic candidate was Bill Clinton. The Republican candidate was George H.W. Bush. That's the Bush father, for those of you who don't remember. That year, the Democratic Party platform, for the first time ever, really brought up gay individuals squarely in their platform, and not only promised to reverse, and I'm quoting now, the Bush administration's assault on civil rights enforcement and to provide civil rights protection for gay men and lesbians, but it also promised an end to the Defense Department discrimination. So this is a time in history when people who were gay individuals could not serve openly in the military. Now, this is not just Bill Clinton. All five Democratic candidates for president that year were in favor of allowing gay people to serve openly in the military. The Republicans' party platform explicitly came out against this stance. And it stated, and again, I'm going to quote, unlike the Democrat Party and its candidate, we support the continued exclusion of a homosexual from the military as a matter of good order and discipline. In addition to these two parties taking these diametrically opposite stances, there was tremendous news coverage as a result of this. And what we show in our paper is that both in the TV media, the main news channels, ABC, NBC, CBS here in the United States, and those were really the main ones that everybody watched. There was no real other source of news at that point. But also in the newspapers, a sharp increase in the amount of news coverage related to gay people. Now, during the preceding years, there had been a lot of attention due to AIDS. We're identifying this as above and beyond news coverage that's due to AIDS. And it's really due to the fact that it's becoming mainstream concerns.
Reading your papers, inspired me to look back into the news archives, and it is quite remarkable to see the amount of coverage that is emerging at this time. So did voter opinions on this topic, did they just line up with their preferred candidates? Bill Clinton was very popular, and did more Democrats decide to support gay rights because Bill Clinton did and he won the election?
So this is actually a great question, and one that we address in one of our papers, where we look at the partisan gap on the approval of same-sex relationship around the 1992 election. Mm. And a comparison of the approval gap of self-identified Democrats and self-identified Republicans through time shows that the partisan opinion gap did not increase as a result of the political debates in 1992-1993, but emerged substantially prior to 1992, somewhere around, you know, the mid to late 80s. Just to be specific, the average partisan gap in the approval of same-sex relationship widened in the mid-80s and stabilized to around 17 percentage points by 1989, which is right before the national debate. And then it remained relatively constant throughout the 90s. So overall, our body of work on this topic suggests that the national party leaders and party platforms did not contribute to partisan divergence, although they may have been very critical in generating a public debate that ultimately changed the public views on this specific issue.
So which groups are changing their opinions here during the late 1980s?
So as mentioned earlier, the 1992-1993 national debate led to a positive shift in attitudes. Mm-hmm. And that positive shift was actually experienced by a wide variety of groups. Men, women, people of different age groups, different education categories, right? And Republican and Democrats as well. And even though we do not observe a greater partisan opinion gap after the debate, our cultural change paper suggests that some groups reacted more strongly than others. In particular, using state-level variation, we show that in places with a larger exposure to the gay community, individuals responded more strongly to the national debate and changed their mind more than in places with a smaller exposure.
So it's always dangerous to try and describe graphs in podcasts, but it is quite remarkable, the graph of how public opinion moves in the 1990s. As you say, the line just goes directly upwards. But at this time, Bill Clinton ran into quite strong headwinds politically when trying to do something about the gay rights. So it's not political leadership, as you say. So what is the mechanism here that is changing public opinion?
Tim, that's also another great question. And we really can't answer it with the degree of certainty that we would love to have, but we can certainly speculate about what's at work and give pretty good indications of what might be responsible. So what Sahar was describing before was that our paper shows that both at the state level and also at the U.S. county level, those places that had greater exposure to the gay community saw a larger increase in opinion during the entire post-election period of the 1990s. Now, what is this gay exposure? You know, what does that mean? Well, what we do is we measure exposure to the gay community in two different ways. First, we use the cumulative AIDS cases at the state level by 1992. Mm-hmm. So the number, the sheer number that have accumulated between 1981, which is the onset officially of AIDS in the United States, and 1992. And that's going to differ across states. Now, it can differ for a large number of reasons, but one of the reasons might be how many gay individuals there are. Remember, this is not a time where people are coming out and saying, hey, yeah, count me, I'm gay. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's not occurring. The other way that we can count individuals, get an idea of what percentage they were of, say, a county or a state, is to make use of the 1990 census. Now, the 1990 census in the US was the first one that asked individuals if they lived with an unmarried partner. So when that partner is of the same sex as the person who's answering the household survey, we can be relatively sure that they are in a same-sex relationship. And what we show is that counties and states that had greater exposure to the gay community measured this way saw their approval increase by more, significantly more, than places that had less exposure to the gay community measured in these two ways. Now, you're asking what might be responsible for that? Well, one possibility would be what's called exposure theory, which is from the mid-1950s in sociology, action psychology. What that posited was that being exposed more to a given type or group of people might increase empathy and therefore decrease discrimination. So one possibility is, since people are coming out more because they're more militant, that was one big, big thing that happened during this period, the rise of the militant, you know, gay movement. I've seen more local parades in favor of gay rights. You would have heard more local news radio stations, more local media. Everything would have given rise to greater exposure. That would be one possibility. But the other way you get exposure is not just exposure to the people, but exposure via the media, via what you see. And it's not that you're necessarily interacting with these individuals more. You're just being exposed more to these issues. And by being exposed more, you're thinking through these issues much more than what you would before. So one thing is heightened salience, being greater where they have a larger gay community. The other thing being heightened exposure to the gay community, interpersonal contact, being much more aware that you have friends and colleagues who were gay than you were before, and that giving rise to you rethinking your opinion and changing your mind. I'm not sure how much one can distinguish between these two things, and there's no reason not to believe that both of them were not playing a role during this period.
This strikes me as very difficult to measure at 30 years distance.
Indeed, it is very, very difficult to measure. We are very lucky that we have a poll that asks people, do you have an acquaintance or friend who is, and in that terminology of that time, a homosexual? And right. A striking low number, like 20% of people were willing to say that they knew someone who was gay in the, say, mid-1980s. By the mid-1990s, this number increases radically by taking all demographics and everything else into account by 25 percentage points. So really, you've seen a large increase in how much people know other gay individuals. So we're lucky to have that data, at least.
This might sound to people who didn't live through this time as a communication from another world, a different time. Can we explain this just a little bit more simply by saying, well, the world changed. We all just became quite a lot more liberal during the 1990s. Is that a good enough explanation of this trend?
Your question actually connects to a popular alternative hypothesis that the increase in approval of same-sex relationship is part of a, you know, broader process of increasing liberalism or greater tolerance towards the civil liberties, civil rights of a number of groups in society, African Americans, women, and more recently, the LGBTQ community. And, you know, this is reflected in the evolution of opinion towards civil liberties experienced in the U.S. in the last 30 years. And we investigate this hypothesis formally by using the GSS core module on civil liberties. And this module asks a set of questions about unpopular groups or individuals regarding their civil liberties. In particular, they ask questions about whether they should be allowed to teach, make a speech, or have one of the books they wrote in the library. And these groups that are covered in the GSS module will include homosexuals, but also communists, racists, atheists, and militarists. So this module is key because it allows us to distinguish between views concerning the morality of same-sex relationship, you know, as reflected in the GSS question about whether same-sex relationships are right or wrong, and precisely these views concerning the civil rights of gay individuals and these other groups that are covered. So we combine the civil liberties questions of all these groups, except for gay individuals, and we combine them using a principal component analysis and created a civil liberty index. And using this index, we show that the approval of same-sex relationships respond to the evolution of attitudes towards civil liberties more generally. But the effect of that greater exposure Raquel mentioned earlier and we mentioned earlier, you know, the greater exposure to the gay community in the 90s remained just as large even after controlling for this civil liberties index. On the other hand, when we look at attitudes towards the civil liberties of gay individuals, we see that it actually follows very closely the evolution of attitudes towards the civil liberties of these other groups and is not affected by the greater exposure to the gay community. I mean, overall, this suggests, right, that the change in the views towards the morality of same-sex relationship is not only about Americans liberalizing on all issues.
So to sum this up, what can politicians listening to this, I assume a lot of politicians are listening to this, what can they learn about what drives opinion on these big questions? What changes opinion on these big questions? Because we have plenty of them around at the moment. Attitudes towards the environment, Black Lives Matter, these are similarly polarizing questions. What do we know from your research?
We don't have an easy answer. Mm. On the one hand, this is a rather special situation. It's much more likely to be seen, say, as, relative to the issue of immigrants, say, as a win-win situation. That is, if you might have a child in the future, or you have a child now who's gay, it's going to be good for you to have gay individuals be accepted more broadly by society. Mm-hmm. If you think about situations such as women's rights or racism, this is far less clear. Yes, you might want women's rights for your daughter because you might want her to fare better. On the other hand, you know, if you have two sons, you might prefer for men to have a privileged position in society. So this is rather special. The other special thing about cultural attitudes towards same-sex relationships is that what the AIDS epidemic showed is that it was prevalent in every single group that you could think about in society. This is not being attracted to same-sex individuals was not reserved for one particular part of America. It transcended class and race and sex. Now, what are the features that it does have in common? And therefore, maybe politicians should be listening to this and learn something, is that the political parties, I would say it's even true, not in democracies, but is that's competing for votes or for money or for support of different parts of society has reasons to go after a particular group that's excluded. Take up that issue and make it its own. That is what the Democratic Party did. Very much so. It was being lobbied explicitly, and it decided to go after this group of voters and this amount of money. And the Republican Party took the opposite stand. The other thing that we think is fairly general is that we think that media exposure and the normalization of a question, in this case by the mainstream political parties and the media, but you can think about many other ways that it could become more mainstream, can make people rethink their attitudes. People take polls and people write down their opinions. They're not necessarily giving it a lot of thought. When something is front and center in the news, they're much more apt to make this what we call, you know, a kitchen table type of discussion and have this discussion with their friends, their neighbors, their relatives. And that might help people change their minds or, and that's always something to worry about, it might polarize opinions that well. Mm-hmm. The other thing that we would point out is that segregation may be very, very negative in this respect. Because if what's really at work is to some extent salience or exposure theory, both of them, you're going to be less exposed to these issues. You're going to be less exposed to different types of people, different beliefs. If you're living in neighborhoods where people look like you, or you work in offices or workplaces where people think like you. So we think that along with the many, many reasons you would like to have more integrated workplaces and more integrated schools and neighborhoods, this is also one. It leads you to rethink your positions on culturally more taboo issues or issues seen as less relevant previously.
Fascinating and so relevant to so many things that we're thinking about today. Raquel, thank you very much.
Thank you, Tim.
And Sahar, thank you as well.
Yes, thank you.
There are two papers here. The first one is called Coming Out in America, 30 Years of Cultural Change. And the authors are Raquel Fernandez, Sahar Parsa, and Martina Villarengo. The second one is called Gay Politics Goes Mainstream, Democrats, Republicans, and Same-Sex Relationships. And Raquel and Sahar are the two authors of that paper. This has been a Vox Talk from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. Every week we bring you the most important latest research. So if you want to know what you're going to be reading in journals in 18 months from now, listen to Vox Talks Economics Today. And when you subscribe, you'll find more than 100 episodes. So whatever type of economics you like, well, there's a Vox Talk waiting for you.